So today my wife and I were sitting at Starbucks and she goes, oh my God, there's a guy from the LA Lakers right there. She got really excited and she was trying to take this picture of him surreptitiously at Starbucks.
Who was it?
Keith something or Toby? I don't know.
Toby Keith? There's nobody named Keith on the Lakers, I'm pretty sure.
Welcome to Touchpoint, a podcast dedicated to discussions on digital marketing and digital patient engagement strategies for hospitals, healthcare systems, and physician practices. In this podcast, we'll dive deep into a variety of topics on the digital tools, solutions, strategies, and processes that are impacting our industry today. We hope to share a lot of great information and have fun along the way. And now, here are your hosts, Reed Smith and Chris Boyer.
Hey, and welcome to episode number 91 of Touchpoint. I am Reed Smith, joined as always by Chris Boyer. How's it going?
Pretty good, Reed. If you turn 91 upside down, Reed, you know what that becomes? Becomes 16. So this is like the opposite of a sweet 16th birthday party.
I mean, that's like a backwards 6 and an upside down 1 or something, isn't it? Not sure that's 16, but we actually have a third guest host today, which for folks that have listened historically, both you'll know the guest and maybe you'll understand why we maybe even have a third co-host today, Greg Matthews. Greg, thanks for spending a few minutes with us.
Thank you. I'm a little intimidated. You guys are, you have quite the rapport going. I'm not sure how I'm going to fit in. I'll do my best though.
We have to fill the time somehow. So Chris and I've just gotten good at saying a lot of words. I'm not sure they mean much, but you know.
And here's a little super tip. Once Reed starts riffing on millennials, just let him finish.
Got it. Okay. I'm making a note of that, Chris. Thank you.
Yeah. As you might would guess, a third co-host, historically, if you've listened to episodes with Dr. Brian Vardabedian, with Bobby Ratu, John Mason, all those guys joined us for the length of an episode shortly before their own show launched. We are actually launching a show along with Greg on data and analytics, which if you've downloaded this episode, you'll know we'll be talking about data today, and just thought it made perfect sense to bring him in, chat about that, chat about the show.
So, Greg, I'm looking forward to hearing your show, and maybe you'll have me on sometime to play the ukulele.
You know, I have been thinking about a way to work that in, Chris, and so far I haven't found it yet, but I'm going to keep looking because I know that is going to be the episode that really makes the show.
So, Chris, he'll call you. Don't call him. So,
okay.
Whether you're new to this show, new to the network, you can find out more about this show, the archives of all our episodes, as well as all the new shows, including Greg's. You can go out there now and subscribe to his trailer and start picking that up when it comes out here in a week or so. Over at touchpoint.health is the website. And then obviously wherever you're listening to this, wherever you get your podcasts, rate, review, subscribe. Best way out there to make sure others can find the show.
And you know, another good way for people to engage with our show and all of our other shows is also to pay a little respect to some of our sponsors that are out there, Reed.
Absolutely. And we're talking about data today. So, you know, this is a great connection, no pun intended, but Loyal, one of our great sponsors, has a new product called Connect. So data, no doubt you're buried in it, from physicians and insurance to locations and services. What if you could climb above it all, manage the connections, see the limitless possibilities?
Well, if you climb to the top, you'll meet Connect. That's Loyal's intelligent data management platform designed to strengthen your system's consumer-facing data while making it simpler and easy to use.
If you'd like to know a little bit more and you happen to be going to the Healthcare Internet Conference in Scottsdale here in just a few short days, you can stop by Loyal's booth there at booth number 6 and say hello, tell them we sent you, and check out not only Connect, but there are all their other products and the features that they have.
And if you can't make it out west, no problem. All you need to do is hop on over to their website, loyalhealth.com/demo, and learn a little bit more. Talk to them directly about it. And be sure when you do that to let them know that Touchpoint sent you.
So we're talking about data. Greg's new show called Data Point. And maybe before we get started, for those that are not familiar with Greg, maybe spend just a minute give a little bit of your background, what led you down this path of data and innovation?
I actually came out of the payer space. In fact, when I met you guys, I was working with Humana's Innovation Center. It was kind of a crazy place at the time. We were doing lots of work around games for health. We were doing work around bike sharing programs, you know, one of which is actually still active as B-Cycle in Austin and a number of other cities. And it was kind of a crazy time. And this was in the mid-2000s, and social media was starting to be a thing. Facebook had recently been opened up to folks beyond the university setting. You know, Twitter was fairly new. And it became my job to figure out for Humana, and I guess for healthcare companies in general, how could they use social media? And then for people who were trying to be healthy, how would they use it? And it led me down a really interesting road. I started doing a lot of study to see how patients were using social media, how doctors were using social media. And that started a conversation around measurement and being able to measure at scale. And it didn't take too long to snowball into me having no background really in statistics or data science, really, really getting into the data about how we could leverage data from social media to better impact healthcare companies. And so I wound up moving to an agency here in Austin, Texas, building a database of over 1 million healthcare stakeholders, digital footprints, and really doing data analysis at scale from a social media perspective, and then really layering in on top of that all kinds of other healthcare data. For doctors, we were looking at referral data and prescribing data. We were looking at their connections and affiliations with hospitals and how hospitals were connected with them. So it has taken a really interesting path, but the whole concept of data and analytics driving innovation is one that was born with me 15 years ago, working for an insurance company, and has brought me here today.
It's that lovely path of learning about data and just getting kind of sucked right into it. I got exposed to data early on in my career as well, and it just kind of connected me through to what I do today as well. And it's kind of like an underpinning of everything that I kind of do. So, so we're going to be talking about data a lot today. And we usually start off every show kind of grounding ourselves, or maybe even what I call sometimes setting the table around what the actual definition of data is. As we always do, we went out to Wikipedia and we found the definition of data. So maybe what I could do is read it out and let you guys both react to that. Wikipedia says, data is measured, collected, and reported and analyzed, whereupon it can be visualized using graphs, images, or other analysis tools. Data, as a general concept, refers to the fact that some existing information or knowledge is represented or coded in some form suitable for better usage or processing. What do you think about that?
I think that the latter half makes a little more sense than the former half. When I was listening to you read that, Chris, I was thinking, man, if the first half of that definition were really true, data is measured, collected, reported, analyzed, visualized, et cetera, we probably wouldn't be having this conversation, because I think at least in the worlds that we live in, data sits in a database somewhere and gathers digital dust without being very well understood.
And kind of the next part of that is a, I guess what in the traditional sense or typically would be considered a different type of data, but they're saying raw data, and that's probably what we see more of, I guess, maybe is unprocessed data, is a collection of numbers or characters before it has been quote unquote cleaned or incorrected by researchers. Raw data needs to be corrected to remove outliers or, maybe errors, things like that. So some of the problem, I think, with data in general is the fact that it just exists. There is no analysis.
Yeah, it just exists, right? It's out there.
It just sits there.
I think it was Matt Gove who said once on one of our interviews, he said that healthcare and hospital systems really are data rich, but information poor. Mm-hmm. Meaning that we have all this data, but none of it is really actionable or usable. I think that that's what we're all saying here, isn't it?
It is. And I think it's interesting, too, to see how it will be interesting to see how the definition of data evolves even on Wikipedia, because I, now that we're sitting here talking through this, I'm thinking about, man, the kinds of things that we're thinking about as data today may not look like data in the past. The three of us have all worked in digital marketing to some degree. And, you know, when you think about forum data, like unstructured textual posts can be data if they're used in the right way and analyzed properly. I think people tend to think about the numbers and charts and spreadsheets, but there are an awful lot of different things that can be data today.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point. And I think, yeah, if it was just used at all, that would be super. I think we have a lot of just verbatim, you know, whether it's HCAPs or just forms on our websites or whatever it may be, verbatim, you know, content, copy, whatever that comes flowing in, comments, rating and review sites, et cetera, that I'm not sure anybody really does much with. Therefore, I don't know that it's terribly valuable to say you have it because you're not using it.
I think that maybe the data is valuable. It's even more valuable if you can actually use it and apply it and make it more actionable. And it just makes me think too, like data is evolving. And here's where I insert my stupid pun of the episode. Data of the future is going to be much more than just a robot on the Enterprise.
Wow. Is this like a Star Trek Next Generation reference? Is that?
Yes, it is. Yes, absolutely.
Okay. I think this is where I skew more towards the millennial, like the overlap or whatever in the generations or however that works. You know, it's like, what is it? If like, you know, data gets imported into a spreadsheet, but nobody uses it, does it really exist?
If a data is recorded in the woods and no one's around to process it, does it really exist? Yeah. Mm-hmm. You found a really good article, Greg, about marketing data fluency for chief marketing officers. And maybe what we could do is kind of walk through that. What do you think? And talk about different ways that we as in the healthcare profession really need to be fluent with data.
Yeah, because that's what we're talking about, right? Is being at a place that you can actually extract or know what to do with it.
That's right. To be able to contextualize it to ensure that it has meaning in the context that you live in, which is, you know, in the case of these the CMOs that we're talking about in the context of their business. It's something that I've seen working with my clients that marketing folks have, number one, I think struggled a little bit with the concept of digital marketing, you know, getting outside the sort of traditional view of what marketing and advertising can be. But the fact that digital has become so important to the way that we market, it means that understanding data isn't really optional anymore for the CMO. You know, it might have been possible, you know, even 5 or 10 years ago to make a business case for something based on some strong feelings, some anecdotes, you know, maybe some surveys, but to do so without detailed and well-analyzed data, it's getting a lot tougher, I think, for the CMO.
I think I've heard both of y'all say this to some extent, but, you know, it's kind of that whole, like, you know, you don't have to be good at analyzing data or being good with metrics or things like that because your replacement will be. That's where I think we are, you know, around data fluency. I think you're starting to see, and I'm speaking more, if I'm looking at hospitals, I see a lot of long-time hospital marketing directors, VPs, senior VPs, whoever it is, based on the size or complexity of the system, whoever's in charge of that part of the organization, you know, starting to be replaced, move on, change roles, because like Chris and I have talked about for a long time is that's just been an advertising department. You know, it hasn't been a marketing department. And now they don't have that luxury anymore. Like they've got to start understanding insights and the analysis of all the data that is coming in.
Particularly because marketing is now starting to get very heavily involved with other avenues of the business than just doing the advertisements, right? It's patient access. I pulled together a meeting last week in our health system that I'm at with patient access, with our clinical team. And really the intention here is to develop a common data definition, maybe even a data dictionary, that when we start to measure things that we're measuring consistently across the board, because the work that we're doing in all of our different areas can potentially be impacting that.
The good news is now you have the definition for both data and raw data from Wikipedia that you can take back to that group.
Exactly. You can cross that one off your to-do list, Chris.
Hey, we want to take a moment to thank one of our sponsors, and that's our good friends at Binary Fountain.
You know, as a healthcare marketer, it's probably pretty obvious these days how much time you're spending on reviews, ratings relative to hospitals, physicians, all that kind of good stuff. You know, too many of those are going unanswered, and they're certainly not being analyzed.
This could be costing us new and current customers. It could be impacting our patient experience scores and potentially impacting our revenue. Luckily, our good friends at Binary Fountain have an online reputation management platform called Binary Health Analytics.
If you'd like to learn more or even schedule a demo, visit them online at binaryfountain.com. That's binaryfountain.com.
I was thinking that, you know, the article that we were talking about that sort of spurred this conversation is one that was written by John Bell, who's a guy that I've admired for a long time. He was with Ogilvy for many years. And what you're saying, Chris, what you're talking about in terms of that definition, that sort of foundational ability to use data, is one of the points that I think John makes really well in this article, which I'm assuming that we'll get posted to the show notes. Mm-hmm. He talks about how it all has to start with what is the application of the data. There's become so much pressure now, I think, for marketers to be insights driven, to be data driven in the kind of decisions they're making. Sometimes in their push to do that, they forget why they're doing it. And so what is it that we actually want the data to tell us? You know, typically it's about understanding a customer better or understanding a market better. But what specifically do we want to get out of it? And it's a huge point to be able to make sure that you're starting with the application for which you're using the data in the first place.
It's that adage, right? That just because you can measure it doesn't mean you should. Mm-hmm. You got to measure those things that actually matter. I think that a lot of us kind of fall prey to that. I myself did when I first got into really measuring actively, and I got my fingers into the first CRM and I actually got all this data at my fingertips. I was like, oh, I'm going to measure this. But, you know, it really becomes much more where you start to use your data in a way to become more directional towards that particular application. That's when you become really fluent with your data.
And honestly, I think that that's a trap that a lot of us fall into. You know, having worked as a consultant and worked in an agency, I love, you know, messing around with data and figuring out, you know, can we create a new algorithm to tie together, you know, three phenomena that we're seeing, or can we create a visualization that's really cool based on this data? And sometimes those things may look really cool or sound really cool, but if they're not actually solving a meaningful business problem, not quite so useful.
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, we've all done this, but you've given a presentation around data, you know, like in a meeting, and you give some like meaningless statistic, and everybody's like, wow. That is something, you know, and you're thinking, well, I mean, it is, but I'm not sure. Why does everybody think this is important? You know, like, what are we doing with time on page again? You know, or whatever. Anyway, it's just funny because I don't think, back to the idea of fluency, application, just like we've started advertising and doing different campaigns without asking. So, hey, real quick, how do we know if we're successful with this or not? Like, what are we trying to do? Everybody just runs out the door and starts doing things. And so, again, kind of that motivation, I guess.
You know, a second point that he brought up too, though, is another application of data that's not just more to solve business problems, but it's really to understand your market, the customer and market insights that you can gather. And I think that that's where a lot of the people that listen to this podcast are working in hospitals. You know, that's where the CRM becomes very valuable, because you can pull in longitudinal data. You could start to kind of segment your audience, your market a certain way. And if you're in strategic planning, you can use more sophisticated tools as well to really start to look at how that data is going to provide you that valuable insights to how your market's going to respond to maybe a particular product or service, or if you're going to open up a hospital or an urgent care center here, what would happen?
Well, I'm curious, and I'm gonna flip the question back towards you, Chris and Reed, because I'm really curious. I think being able to understand the markets that you're operating in a deeper way, it makes all the sense in the world, because, you know, you want to understand the population, you want to understand their demographics, you want to understand socioeconomic information, you want to understand what your competitors are doing and what they're doing really well. I think all of those things are really important. And it feels like, for me, who's worked primarily with pharma companies, with med tech companies, with insurance companies, and less with hospitals and health systems, it feels to me as though the hospital and the health system do that work really well from a patient perspective. And I guess I'm curious what your take is on how frequently or how well that tends to be done, thinking about the healthcare professional. You know, if you're thinking about referrals, or if you're thinking about recruitment of healthcare professionals, do you get the sense that that is done with equal rigor for that audience and among hospitals and health systems?
Based on the pause, I would say no. I don't know. I mean, Chris, you've been in hospitals probably more than any of us in the last 6 to 8 years or so. I don't know. I think everybody's predominantly focused on the patient or potential patient, right?
You know, from my perspective, and having run CRM and PRMs in multiple health systems, PRMs being physician relationship management databases, they're certainly used in different ways. And no, we don't have that rigor when it comes to healthcare professionals. That's not to say that we shouldn't have that same amount of effort and focus. But like many things, as we're evolving and marketing to become much more embracing of other industry type of marketing activities, we latched on right away to consumers because that data was frankly much more available,
sure,
much more easier to process. When you start to think about like all the potential referring physicians in your marketplace, it's very difficult to kind of track down all that data in a way that actually can be meaningful. And many of the physician relationship management databases are more like issues management, tracking like how many times you round on a doctor and what their opinion is of your health system. Greg, have you seen that there's more of this sort of like open market for physician or healthcare provider data out there?
I think that there's a clear need that's been expressed for it. Having specialized for the last several years in understanding physicians' online behavior, I can say there's probably a lot more of that kind of data that's available than most hospitals or health systems are either aware of or prepared to use effectively. It is tricky because we're talking about a much smaller audience. And of course, you would really leverage that information in a very different way than you might as you're looking at CRM data, for example. And by the way, for the listeners, I should note, I'm getting a chat message from Reed right now that says, clearly we didn't explain the format of the show well enough to you. You're not allowed to ask questions. So I'll back.
I did not send that note.
That's not actually true. But I bet if he'd thought of it, he would have. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think it's really interesting because for the hospital marketer, their job is changing all the time, just like any other marketer would. I feel like there's a real opportunity to become a little bit more sophisticated in the way that we think about that key part of the way we deliver service, the professional that's actually doing it.
I think it's just historically this an evolution. Again, it's an evolution of a thought process or mindset around patient growth. You know, we're so concerned with access points is health systems, not in a negative way, but it's just that's where the growth comes from. Now, you will see growth on, the physician recruitment side of the equation. Hey, there's been an analysis and there's a need in this market. We need more of these types of doctors or those types of doctors, or there's an opportunity for us to gain market share in neurosciences. And so let's go recruit 3 or 4 neurosurgeons and a neurologist or whatever. It's thought of that way, but not in the sense of the typical model has historically looked like outreach, right? It's the pharmaceutical rep scenario. We're going to go call on physicians, which I think is great. There's nothing wrong with that. And people should do it and probably do more of it and invest more heavily in it. And then to Chris's point, that turns into customer service databases.
You know, this brings up something too, and related to another point that John Bell brought up in his article around using data to become more relevant for your customers and start to personalize your communication. And recently, I saw some results of a survey that was done, or some kind of research that was done, that indicated the physician audience that are associated with our health system prefer communication via email. And I thought to myself, that does not bear out to what actually I think is happening, because if I've known many doctors and they don't like being communicated to from us via email. So I'm not sure exactly where that data comes from.
I think this actually gets back to a key premise around the concept of data fluency, which is really understanding, and I'm not going to say customers at this point, because I think it goes beyond customers. I think understanding your stakeholders to a degree that you're actually able to ascertain what information do they want from you, and in what form do they want to receive that information? And it may very well be that there is certain kinds of information that doctors or nurses or other healthcare professionals would like to have via email, but it's probably not everything. We can probably be a little bit more sophisticated in thinking about the answer to that question. You know, some of it, you know, we may want to have in a microsite somewhere. Some of it we may want to produce a series of videos, or I mean, audio is something that I think is still has such massive potential in terms of outreach for physicians. You know, when I was a kid in the backseat of the car going on vacation with my dad, who's a doctor, it drove me crazy, but the man listened to medical education tapes in the car all the time. And he was an obstetrician gynecologist, by the way. So that was quite a way to learn about the world for a young boy.
You have a lot of CME credits, it sounds like.
I really do. And none of which are doing me much good right now. But no, it just makes me think there are all kinds of ways to reach those customers. And I'd love to see us be a little bit more nuanced and a little bit more creative about how we do that.
I think you cracked the code there. Read Physician Communications. It's about books on tape.
Boom.
There you go.
There it is. Let's export all our episodes to cassette.
The other thing too, okay, and I'm kind of going through all this data fluency points that John Bell brought up here. This fourth one that he brought up was about addressability. What does that mean exactly? Because that I got a little confused with the definition.
Yeah, actually is the conversation that we're just having, which is you need to understand as you're reaching people, what is it that you, first of all, from your own perspective, what is the core of what you need them to know or do? I mean, that's the sort of at the heart of marketing and communications. But understanding what information they actually need to do their jobs, that's really where you get into addressability, because it means more than just finding the right channel even. It's understanding their workflow, understanding their value chain, to be able to know how these things you want to communicate to them fit. And if you're able to address those things, to find that intersection point in the Venn diagram of, you know, what's strategically important to me versus what is strategically important to the person or people I'm trying to reach, that's really what addressability is about. And beautiful thing about data and analytics is it is by its very nature able to help articulate or to help shed light on what are some of those things that are important to your customer. What are the value chains that person is operating through, so that you can better understand how and when to hit them with what.
That's interesting. And the reason why I say that's interesting, this aforementioned meeting I just had, I was actually asked to be a data steward for our marketing and communications team at an enterprise group that's looking at data governance. Hmm. In this particular case, you know, it became very clear to me. I was really eager to show up and say, these are the things that are important to us, and this is how we measure data, and kind of being all proud. But the big thing that I learned from just this brief meeting I had, the first of many that we're going to have, is that it's a two-way street. The data that I'm sharing from a marketing communications perspective will help them get better information from customers that we are touching. But conversely, I have to make sure that I'm sharing it to them in a way that they actually can see value from that. So that to me sounds like right what you're describing there, Greg, about addressability. That's cool.
Yeah, I really like that, Chris. And I love that the organization that you're a part of is thinking about data governance to that level. I think it's a really good sign. And I think to be honest with you, I think it points to a lot of data fluency, to be able to understand the context around data and how it fits into the organization in that way.
What's the recommendation? Folks listening to this show, they're marketing professionals, they work in hospitals or thereabout, I guess, in the healthcare space, obviously. they're fluent in data to varying degrees. And so how do you continue on that journey? We mentioned CMEs earlier, but like, where do you, I mean, how do you get proficient at this?
One of the things that I think is really interesting and that I've seen in marketing organizations that I've been close to is that, especially in healthcare, there's almost always in a healthcare company, an organization that is very focused on leveraging data-driven insights to make business decisions, even if it's just the finance team. But in hospitals and health systems, there are fantastic departments of CIOs that are really, really focused on those data assets and making sense of them from a clinical perspective. I have seen some really interesting partnerships in healthcare organizations in which the marketing organization relies on other internal organizations to help them build new processes, new constructs. You know, you were talking about data governance, Chris. I think the organizations inside your current company that focus on data can probably leverage, could probably share some really interesting insight with the marketing team about how to build that data fluency and in a way that's meaningful and relevant for the business. And they have the added benefit of already being a part of the business. They understand the culture. They understand a lot of the drivers behind the business. And that's certainly not the only way, but it's a way that I think is probably underutilized by organizations that are, you know, really quick to maybe, you know, go hire a Accenture or a McKinsey or something like that. I think there's a lot to be gained internally.
To add to that, Greg, because I 100% agree, is it's also a sense of knowing that this is sort of like new ground that you're going down as you're starting to interact with others and starting to collaborate around data and using data in a way that actually can start to drive towards business value or innovation or whatever it may be, to also be mindful of the fact that we might not be speaking the same language around data yet. So, you know, spend a lot of time trying to gain awareness and a reciprocity and in understanding one another as you're going down this path, because otherwise you might be talking about something and other people are just not getting it, even though they may be the data analysts for the organization.
It actually developing that organizational lexicon is really important. And it's one of the things that's tricky because I think it's a field and frankly, a lexicon that is changing rapidly enough that you can almost be sure that there are going to be some differences of opinion as to, you know, what we mean when we say X.
Hey, Chris, before we go too much further, jump into this next segment of the podcast, I did want to mention and thank one of our sponsors, Influence Health. You know, they've got a consumer experience platform that covers several things. And correct me if I'm wrong, but we've talked about content management systems on this podcast.
Yeah, we did.
What about CRMs?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we covered CRMs for sure.
And then obviously each and every week we talk about digital marketing. So digital marketing systems, you know, in one way, shape or form have probably been covered, right?
That's right. Digital marketing systems. And I would say that we even talk about it in a way of that overall digital consumer experience.
Well, there you go. I would recommend for anybody interested in one of those topics or anything else, they've also got some complimentary solutions on their website. But head over to their website, take a look at what they've got and what they're offering relative to CMS, CRM, digital marketing systems, kind of how all that is woven together in what they call their consumer experience platform. Find your way over to influencehealth.com.
All right, now we're going to do something a little bit different. Instead of an expert interview, obviously Greg's been on for the entirety of this episode, which we very much appreciate his time and willingness to do that. But we did want to treat you to the trailer for his upcoming show, Data Point. So it's like a 2-minute trailer. We'll give you great context around what to expect. But Greg, maybe set this up for us and we'll roll into it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mentioned in my introduction, I don't have any particular training in data science or statistics. My background is really in much more focused on marketing, storytelling. It was not something I expected at all to be drawn into the world of data and analytics. But the truth is, being able to tell stories with data is fascinating. And so one of the things that you are going to hear in this trailer is that it's not just about sort of the latest news or, you know, the key innovation. I also am hoping to really introduce the audience to the people and the stories behind that data and behind that news. So that's really what the trailer's about.
Well, let's give it a listen.
Hello, and welcome to the Data Point Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Matthews, and I've spent the last 15 years working in health innovation. I've been able to meet, rub elbows with, and share stories and ideas with passionate people from America's heartland to China to the Middle East and South America, all of them focused on reshaping healthcare, making it better and more accessible to more people. Increasingly, my own focus has been on how data and analytics can be leveraged to power that innovative and often disruptive change. Scottish physician James Lind conducted the first recorded clinical trial in 1747 when researching a treatment for scurvy. At least since then, scientific data and analysis has played an important role in healthcare. In the digital age, data has become important in more than just clinical trials. Because healthcare is also a business as opposed to a mere profession, the more data-driven insights power businesses, the more important they are to healthcare. Today, data and analytics support, or at least could support, nearly every decision that's made in healthcare. How a doctor diagnoses a condition or chooses a course of therapy. How a hospital hires a doctor or attracts a patient. How a patient chooses a physician. How a caregiver manages the care of a loved one. How a medicine is developed, tested, and priced, and ultimately launched. How an insurance premium is set. And how a wearable biosensor goes from being a curiosity to a necessity in optimizing health and fitness. The list is practically infinite. The Data Point Podcast is about all of that. It's about unearthing innovation in the application of data and analytics. It's about unpacking the news and trends as they relate to data and analytics in healthcare. But it's more than just your way of staying ahead of the news. It's about getting to know the people who are making the news, the people who are pushing the limits and breaking the barriers. It's about making you, the listener, feel at home in the world of data and analytics, whether it's the main focus of your profession or not. When Dr. Lind began that clinical trial over 270 years ago, he had no idea what the future would hold for data and analytics in healthcare. But you will. Tune in to the Data Point Podcast every 2 weeks on the Touchpoint Media Network and join me in meeting the future today.
All right, and again, that is the trailer for Greg's upcoming show, Data Point. You can learn more about that show as well as all the links to subscribe to it over at touchpoint.health. First, before we get to recommendations, a quick update. Chris and I have been kind of bouncing around at different conferences, and as you listen to this, we will just be days away from the Healthcare Internet Conference out in Scottsdale. So HCIC. .net. That is November the 5th through the 7th. So if you're going to be there, we'd love to hear from you and obviously love to sync up while you're in town.
Yeah, we're going to be recording a live episode of our podcast next week from the Healthcare Internet Conference, but we also would love to run into you and just, well, not run into you, but we'd also like to just chat with you. We're going to be walking around with microphones. We'd love to hear your feedback, your thoughts, and maybe if you get a really smart idea, we might interview you for an upcoming show. So definitely look us up.
Absolutely. And then after that, we've got the Mayo Clinic Conference down in Jacksonville. So socialmedia.mayoclinic.org. And we will be hanging out there actually doing a workshop on how to do a podcast or maybe how to not do a podcast. In either case,
exactly.
So there you go.
I'm not going to comment on that either way.
Well, we're also going to be doing some roundtables, Greg, around actionable metrics.
You can ask us anything about metrics. I will give you an answer. I'm not sure if it's right or not, but I will give you an answer. And also on podcasting is another one. So that should be fun. There's also the pre-conference kind of social media residency, as they call it.
And we'll be doing a live show from there as well. So there you go. I mean, for the next couple episodes, we'll be doing some live shows. Greg, this was kind of a fun show that you were on part of. You know, we wrap up every one of these shows looking for recommendations. Do you have any good recommendations for us today, Greg?
I do, actually. It's one of my favorite parts of the show. I've been working with this organization in the UK. I'm the remote guy. And they have picked up a new piece of technology to help facilitate video conferencing. And I think a lot of us have probably gotten a little skeptical about video conferencing, just because it never seems to add up to really feeling like you're there. But this piece of technology they picked up is called the Meeting Owl, O-W-L, the Meeting Owl. And it is a really incredible camera and microphone system that actually all the time shows a 360-degree view of the room, and it'll tell where people are. So it'll essentially create a panoramic view of the room. And then as individuals are speaking, it will rotate so that that individual has their own frame as well as the panorama. And it really just, it completely enhances the conference experience. So I've been raving about it for the last couple of weeks, and you can find it at owllabs.com.
That's pretty crazy. I'm not sure I want people to do a 360-degree view of my home office.
That is the danger, of course.
Yes, that's awesome. That's very cool. I'm going to check that out. I'm actually looking right now. Very cool. Well, Chris, what do you have?
Well, Reed and Greg, today I'm going to be recommending a Netflix show that I started to binge just this last weekend and have been just furiously addicted to it. Have you guys seen the first season of Making a Murderer?
Mm-hmm. Nope. That's a new one to me.
Well, you should definitely check it out. Yeah, it's following a case that's in Wisconsin. Two people that were involved in a murder, and they basically were filming the whole trial that was unfolding, and some of the controversy around the trial. And it actually had a very, very much a perspective of that these two individuals were actually innocent, and that they potentially were framed. And then at the end of it, it went one way that the producers weren't expecting that it to go, and it was really good. Well, they just came out with season two, and I thought, well, what happened with season two? Well, since the first one was very popular, it actually caused a huge impetus around more lawyers kind of coming to their rescue, more people starting to help, and it's following what happened after the release of season one. It's very meta, Reed. If you've seen season one, season two is really about what happened after the backlash of season one and how they're still trying to unpiece this story. And I have to tell you, it's very compelling. Very, very compelling. So
wow,
Making a Murderer.
Talk about life and
two.
Art. Yeah, life and art converging there.
Yeah. I know. It's really great.
Yeah.
So I recommend it.
I've seen that, obviously, on Netflix when you log in, that there was a season two. It is strange because you wouldn't think there would be a season. If you've seen season one, it's like, well, what's there to talk about? But in any case, I'm excited to check that one out. I'm actually also recommending, it's on Netflix. I'm assuming you could probably watch this elsewhere. And I'm probably one of the few people that have actually not seen this. But I've been binge watching Mad Men for the first time. And just have a draw to want to start smoking now. I'm not sure why, but I just feel like in the middle of the day, I should like get a cigarette. It's the craziest thing because I don't understand, because obviously folks smoked quite a bit, through that time before people realized how deadly and dangerous and not good for you it was. But the idea that just people smoked in their house and in their car and in the office, just like, how do you do that? Anyway, that's a whole nother deal. But
between the smoking and the drinking, it's pretty shocking, isn't it?
It is. It is. I mean, everybody just had like, whiskey just like all day long. Just bourbon like in every office.
I sort of envy you going into that for the first time because I remember how much I loved it the first time I watched that series. It's
Yeah, it is. It is. I'm several seasons in at this point. Anyway, it's fun. It's fun. I like the era. I like the design. I like the feel of it. It's just kind of a neat show to watch.
Now I want to go watch it again.
Very cool. Very cool. All right. Well, that brings us to the end of episode 91, talking about data. And so again, Greg, appreciate the time and willingness to come on. So very much looking forward to the show. Again, touchpoint.health for not only his upcoming show, Data Point, but all the shows on the Touchpoint Media Network. And we would love to have you subscribe wherever you get your podcast, rate, review, connect with us online, LinkedIn, Twitter, all those kinds of good places. We certainly appreciate the support. Visit the sponsors. Let us know we sent you. And for Greg Matthews, Chris Boyer, and Reed Smith, we'll see you next week.
This has been a Touchpoint Media production. To learn more about this show and others like it, please visit us online at touchpoint.health.